Okay. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, my fine friends. Welcome to the album wrap episode of season 9.5 of the Tom Petty Project podcast. This is the weekly podcast that digs into the entire Tom Petty catalogue, song by song, album by album, and includes conversations with musicians, fans, and people connected with Tom along the way. I'm your host, Kevin Brown, joined as always on these episodes by my pal. He's the salt to my pepper, the Mike Campbell to my Tom Petty, the Mark Borch to my Walter Payton. It's the one and only John Paulson. What do you think of that reference?
What an intro. I don't know if I can live up to that, but thank you very much. I'm happy to be here. This is definitely discussing greatest hits albums in general is definitely in my wheelhouse. And we are really in Tom Petty's wheelhouse here in this Full Moon Fever, Into the Great Wide Open, Greatest Hits, Wildflowers. This is his real big heyday, I think. So this is a good time to be talking.
Yeah. And so like I've had this little interstitial season between Into the Great Wide Open and Wildflowers, and just very quickly talking about, and obviously we're going to talk about Mary Jane's Last Dance, but Peace in LA and Something in the Air, that, you know, we've got two tracks in there that I've covered as well. General thoughts on, well, maybe not Something in the Air, but general thoughts on Peace in LA. Like, how familiar are you with that song? How often do you listen to it? What do you think of it?
And I haven't, just in full disclosure, I haven't listened to your episodes about Peace in LA or Something in the Air. So I don't know where you stand on these, but Peace in LA, I think it came from a good place. Tom's got a good heart. He was trying to help.
Yeah.
It's not a song. You asked me to get some thoughts together on it, so I turned it on this morning. This is not very good. this is not. I mean, it also just brings up a really bad time in Southern California and just bad memories. But I think what he was trying to do is to calm everybody down. I looked at the lyrics and it's basically saying what happened was wrong, but we shouldn't loot and, you know, steal from our own and you know, stop the violence. Don't play into their hand. But I mean, it just kind of comes off. I don't know. It's like, who's this guy to tell everybody what, you know, the black community or how, you know, how to respond to this situation? This obviously rioting is not great, but I think he was, like I said, trying to do the right thing. Not a song that I would ever turn on other than to listen to it for this podcast. I think it appeared on the playback box set.
Yes, with the piece mix as well, which
piece mix,
doesn't really.
Does it add the guy's voice talking
it's
about the
Howie?
Stuff?
Yeah, it's got Howie's that because they, you know, Howie was out of town, so they called him and tried to record something, but it's like, well, the quality's just not there. So they had him say something, and then that's what I'm pretty sure that's what ended up on there. Yeah,
yeah. It's not something that I would just completely ignore. I think it came at an important time in Southern California, but it's not one of my favorite Petty tracks by any means.
Well, and that's pretty much where I ended up. It's like, yeah, it's, I mean, it's musically, you can tell it's rushed. Lyrically, he's just trying to get a message out there and the sentiment's good, but the song itself, is it going to make any of my playlists? Absolutely not. But like you said, though, we're in John Paulson territory firmly, because we're basically really a greatest hits compilation is basically just a playlist, right?
Mm-hmm.
First thing I wanted to quickly chat about then on the greatest hits is the way they sequenced it, which I thought was interesting, because if you look at most artists' greatest hits, it's not usually done chronologically, where with the Heartbreakers, with Tom and the Heartbreakers, they've just gone through Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers down through Into the Great Wide Open in sequence roughly. So what do you think of that? What's your impression of doing it that way?
I prefer to make my playlists chronologically. And, you know, even I might go so far as to put the singles in order that they were released. So if I ever do listen to it in order, I kind of can get a feel for how the band was releasing their music and releasing their singles. And I prefer it because it also shows how a band's sound changes over time. I think there is, I just hit shuffle on my playlist a lot. So I do like the randomness too. And I think that what you did with your double LP sequencing, which we'll talk about a little bit later, is you're trying to sequence it in a way where the songs fit together. And it's also just a greatest hits compilation. I think you did a really good job with that. So there is pluses and minuses to both. I prefer just the anthology in order version. But I could see the benefits of the other side too.
Yeah, and I mean, when I listen to it, again, I don't really listen to greatest hits very often, just because, you know, as Petty has, we always say this, we know these songs inside out, upside down. We've heard most of them a million times. So they're not usually the ones I go to, so it's not necessarily my favorite. But when I listen to it, you do get that sense of growth, Right, you definitely are, because you know the sound from American Girl Breakdown through to Into the Great Wide Open, Learn to Fly is completely different. Songwriting is different. The production techniques are different. Everything, you know, when you get through Iovine era, then you get into Don, so you can feel that journey. So I don't mind it. It's just I wasn't quite sure when I got them. I was like, I don't know. I don't know if I want to do it that way. But so I did it. I did it two different ways. My CD is chronological, but my vinyl is sequenced as I wanted to do it. So let's talk about Something in the Air then, real quick. That's the cover. It's the, you know, what I always call it, it's the contractual obligation song, because we've got to put this record out. We don't have two originals, but Something in the Air gets on the album in place of a few songs that I would argue pretty strongly, and I know that you would too, should have been included instead. So should we talk about some of those, or talk about Something in the Air first?
Well, I listened to it this morning, and I remember when this Greatest Hits disc came out and hearing it, and I thought it was a good song. And I don't know if I was immediately aware that it was a cover. I think maybe over time I realized that it was a Thunderclap Newman song. I mean, that was a little bit before my time, and I think 1969. Wasn't listening to a lot of late 60s rock as I was coming up. Some, but not kind of more obscure act, not obscure, but less known acts that like Thunderclap Newman. But I think it's a nice cover. I was kind I you know I was, after I listened to it today, I was found myself singing it a little bit afterward, and I was like, oh yeah, it's a good track. I mean, it's obviously a really good song. And Tom always does, and the Heartbreakers always do really good covers. And I think sonically it fits on the album. I don't think, I would want to put a cover typically on a Greatest Hits album in general, especially when there's all these other songs that could have been included. But I wonder, did they say you have to release two new tracks to get people to buy this?
That's what I
Which,
suspect.
yeah. And if that's the case, did they have another? I mean, they had originals lying around all over the place. Now, did they have time to go through digging to find You Come Through or Ways to Be Wicked or something like that? I don't know.
Well, and again, I mean, that maybe that's where Tom thinks, well, I'm not going to put an original on there that I'm not really convinced about the quality of, so that's why you go to a cover. Maybe, right? I don't know. But someone was asking me on social media, like, I wonder where Something in the Air came from for Petty, though, because Thunderclap Newman was this really, I mean, they're a one album band. It was an assembled band to showcase the talents of the three guys by Pete Townshend of The Who, right? So when did you guys hear this? Like, how come that's the song that you've latched onto? It is an odd choice, right? Because you would think the Byrds, you would think, you know, Carl Perkins or one of the bands that Tom loved growing up, or Elvis or something. You wouldn't necessarily think this weird, obscure British band. But hey, that's the Heartbreakers. They just loved every stripe of music.
Yeah, they're all over the place with their covers for sure.
Okay, well, I mean, if we look at the songs that weren't included, I think the four biggest ones for me in terms of sort of things that were actually released, obviously, Jamming Me. You know, is the one we're going to probably talk about a little, probably the most, because that was, I think, the highest charting omission, I think, right? And it also means that there's nothing from Let Me Up, I've Had Enough on the album. But then you also think about Change of Heart, because there's only one song from Long After Dark. Woman in Love, there's only one song from Hard Promises. And then the other one that I was looking at, which really surprised me in retrospect, is anything that's rock and roll isn't on there, because that was the song that sort of got them moving a little bit in the UK. And you would have thought that that would have been a, because it's a big song in the Petty canon, right? It's been played a ton live, but it doesn't get included on the record.
Yeah, and I think we'll talk a little bit about this album in the comparing it to some other Greatest Hits album maybe a little bit later. If we're diving into what was excluded, there's quite a few. I mean, number one, I would say Stop Dragging My Heart Around wasn't included on the original Greatest Hits release, and I think there's a strong case for it, which I know we might have some debate about that later. But if you're looking, I looked at it two different ways. If you look at it based on streams popularity, looking back at it from 2024, Love Is a Long Road is at 36 million streams. It had 13 points. So when I say points, it's the point system over at musicvf.com, which is a way for them to sort of give one number to all this chart performance, whether it did well in the US or in the UK or in the US rock chart, et cetera. So, You're So Bad, 32 million. You know, Love is the Long Road is at the top of this list, I think, because of the Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a popular song before that, but I think it really got a big boost here in the last couple months with that trailer coming out. Facing the Crowd. So the top three from a streaming standpoint are from Blue Moon Fever. And as I looked at all these, you know, as I put together all my playlists and stuff, you can see that, you know, some albums do really, really well. And some of these songs are carried by the fact that they're on albums. So they get a boost for that. And so you get into A Woman in Love, 9.7 million, 26 points. Anything that's Rock and Roll, 8.4 million, 23 points. An Apartment Song, which wasn't a single, didn't have any points at all, but 8.1 million streams. Yeah. And then Rebels, 8 million with 25 points is another. And then after that, it's like, I feel a whole lot better from a streaming standpoint, 7.2, Zombie Zoo, 7.2. And then Jammin' Me, I wanted to go all the way down there to see Jammin' Me at 7 million because the streams are really low for a song that charted so well. It had the highest chart performance at 73 points. So just based on chart performance, it was Jammin' Me, Change of Heart, Facing the Crowd, Out in the Cold, Woman in Love, Rebels, Too Good to Be True, Anything That's Rock and Roll, Make It Better, Forget About Me, which is kind of it was a hit for him, but it only has 800,000 streams, King's Highway, You're So Bad, Runaway Trains, and Love is a Long Road from a point standpoint.
Yeah.
So I originally was limiting myself to 74 minutes, but I started to do some research and it does seem like there was 80 minute CDs available at that time. They were starting to come out in the late 80s, early 90s. So you said I have 80 minutes, which actually made things easier, but then they also made things tougher. So I ended up keeping the 17 must haves, which I think we can agree on: Free Fall, and I Won't Back Down, American Girl, Mary Jane's Last Dance, Learning to Fly, Refugee, Breakdown, Don't Do Me Like That, Into the Great Wide Open, Don't Come Around Here No More, Running Down a Dream, The Waiting, Here Comes My Girl, You Got Lucky, Listen to Her Heart, I Need to Know, and even The Losers, which was not a single.
Yeah.
Amazingly. In addition to those 17, I have Stop Dragging My Heart Around because I think it was a number one hit. I don't know if contractually they could have borrowed it from Atlantic, I think was the parent company that released Belladonna.
Mm-hmm.
It did appear on a later version of this greatest hits. So they did like think that it was kind of a petty track. And I think it would just add a whole lot of value to this. And then I would add Change of Heart, Jammin' Me, Love is a Long Road, and You're So Bad. And I think the one snub that's bothering me, there's a couple, there's a few, but the one that's kind of bothering me is Facing the Crowd.
Right.
Because it does well streaming numbers, and it does well with, if you look at the chart numbers, it's like third in both.
Yeah.
So it really should belong, but it is kind of, as you mentioned before, when we did the Full Moon Fever, it's a minor key, kind of a downer song. And my philosophy on this was like, you want to put this on at a party. You want to put this on at the bar. You don't want to have to do any DJing. You want to keep this thing up tempo and keep things rocking. You kind of want to stay away from the ballads unless it's something like Free Falling. So I went with Change of Heart, Rocker, Jammin' Me, Rocker, Love's Long Road, Rocker, and You're So Bad, which is a pretty good rocker as well. So those are the four that I used. And then, you know, I think you got on me over DM about my being 1 minute over on my running time. I feel like, you know, Tom and Mike were capable enough to figure out an edit here or there where they could have made it work. And I actually think that there were some releases that were coming out that were over 80 minutes on CD. The only issue is they were not playing in certain CD players.
Yeah.
So there was a few older CD players that wouldn't play the 80 minute CDs, which I think is, looking back on this, it's just hilarious.
Well, kids these days, they don't know they're born. They don't know all these limitations, or, you know, or if you had more than 100 tracks that wouldn't play, it wouldn't display the CD information because it could only go up to two digits. All those things, kids these days don't know. But I was looking too that, you know, I mean, so my list, the ones that I ended up putting on there were A Woman in Love, It's Not Me, Rebels, Runaway Trains, and we're going to get into that conversation about Runaway Trains versus Jammin' Me, I'm sure. But I was also looking just at straight chart performance on the US rock chart. And I think when you get into that, like you said, Facing the Crowd hit number 5, You're So Bad hit number 5, Out in the Cold hit number 1 on the US rock chart. So that's a big omission, you know. King's Highway hit number 4. Runaway Trains at number 6, Rebels at number 5. So there's these songs that are on the periphery. I think Woman in Love hit 5 as well. Change of Heart hit 10. So there are these songs that are getting lots of radio play that people definitely know, that, like you said, you can definitely throw on there. Now, the other thing we've not sort of touched on is, this isn't, when, you know, from the point of view, I'm pretty sure we're coming at this from the same angle, that we're not putting together our favorites. This is not our favorites from this era, because that, then you get into, well, that's going to change things drastically, right? Because then you're going to have a real problem.
I would say that these are they end up being my favorites based on the criteria of at least either being a huge streaming hit for them now and very popular with the fans, or being a chart hit.
I'm belonging on a greatest hits. I think that's the quality. That was the qualifier for me. Is like, should this be on Tom Petty's greatest hits? You know? And so let's get into this one straight away then. Jamming Me and Runaway Trains. The reason I picked Runaway Trains over Jamming Me is because I think it gives a bit more breadth to Petty's sound, where Jamming Me is a pretty straight up rocker. And we've got those on the album already. I thought Runaway Train shows that a little bit more of that synth. We've got a little bit of it on, you know, You Got Lucky, and a little bit on Don't Come Around Anymore. But I wanted Runaway Trains on there. And you know what? That song has really grown on me. Since I listened to it, since I did that episode, I listened to that song quite a lot. And you're laughing at me, John.
Well, I'm glad that you like it. I mean, this is part of why we're going through this exercise, and we're discovering songs that we maybe didn't like as much then, and now we like a lot. But I'm looking at Runaway Trains. I listened to it yesterday thinking, like, okay, what am I missing about this? And, Jan Hammer opening to me, it sounds extremely dated. Streams aren't there. It's okay in terms of streaming, but not even close to Jamming Me. I think it's probably the third best song, if that. Let's see here, on that album. Jamming Me, I think, is better. It'll All Work Out, I think, is better. I would say, I like Ain't Love Strange better than Runaway Trains, but that's more of a minor album track. So for me, if you're going to take one track from this album, you got to go with the hit. And Jamming Me was number one on the rock chart. And you mentioned just that, but it was also pretty high on the US
18.
Hot 100. Yeah, 18th on the US 100. So I think, to me, if you and I were tasked in 1993 with putting this out, we would have a knockdown drag out about Jamming Me versus Runaway Trains.
You are probably right. But I make no apologies for my choice. I make no apologies. Like I said, I just wanted to, I was justifying it to myself, maybe just with the chart position, because it did get in the rock chart in the top 10. But
it did, but you just said that these are not you should not be your favorites. They should be the hits.
I think a greatest hit should also be representative, though.
It is. I mean, it's got Jam. It would have Jamming Me on it.
How much do you really like Jamming Me? Do you rate that song like really highly in Tom's catalog?
I don't rate it really highly. I rate it highly than Runaway Trains. It's also grown on me throughout this process, and it's, you know, Spotify is feeding it to me a lot, because when I was listening to Let Me Up, I Had Enough for the podcast, the Spotify decided that I must really like this song, so it's going to play it more after my other Petty's tracks or whatever play. I think it's a total rocker. Is it amongst his very best? No. But if you're going to pick a song from that album for greatest hits, I think it has to be Jamming Me. But, you know, we can disagree and still be friends and still do the podcast.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's the beauty. It's the beauty of the subjectivity of music, as I always say. So, well, let's talk then about Stop Dragging My Heart Around, because that one, I didn't even consider that one, because it was never released on a Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers record or a Tom Petty record, right? So that was my qualifier for that. And out of the two songs that came from that collab with Stevie, I'd always much rather pick Insider, but I didn't go with Insider or Southern Accents either, precisely for the reason that you went with, because Tom deliberately didn't want to release, you know, he didn't release ballads as singles, and it would sort of interrupt the flow of this record if you start throwing something that low key on. So I didn't go with those, but I didn't go with Stop Dragging My Heart Around for that reason. So how do you justify putting it on when it was never released under the Heartbreakers label or name?
Because Tom Petty wrote it. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers played on it. Stevie credits Tom for a lot of the success. And, you know, it wouldn't have been the same song if some other guy had sung on it with her. So to me, like, we're looking for his biggest hits of the era, and I think it's okay. And they obviously agree with me later on, because I did include it on a later version of this, that if you're trying to, like, my approach would be, if I'm releasing this, I want to provide the best value to the fans. And if they can get Stop Dragging My Heart Around on this, if there's a way to, you know, lease that song, then that's just offering my fans the best possible value on this particular CD that I'm putting out.
So then for, you know, when we get to making our Greatest Hits Volume 2 at some point, are you going to argue for I Won't Back Down by Johnny Cash?
Well, that's a straight cover. Tom's Wait, on it.
Tom's on it, sings on it, the Heartbreakers.
He's on it, but it's not a duet.
So that's the line, is Tom's got to be the one of the primary vocalists? Is that the...
Well, I think that's a big part of it, sure. Yeah, okay. I mean, it's a duet with, you know, Stevie Nicks and Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. And the Heartbreakers are providing all the music. And you could say the same thing about I Won't Back Down, I think, right? They played on that album with Johnny Cash.
The whole album, yeah.
So you can make that case, but it's not a duet with Tommy or with Johnny Cash. That is the line.
I'm of course being facetious. I mean, completely understand it. But I mean, the other thing is, I suppose with Stop Dragging My Heart Around, and I haven't covered that one yet, is, and I don't know, I mean, probably most of our listeners will know this, the Petty Heads will know this, but the track was essentially done. I mean, it wasn't really a duet. They gave Stevie the track and said, well, just put your lead vocal over top of it, right? And it works great, because those two voices, as we know, just work perfectly together. But it is one of those things where you can't have insider, it's too strong, I can't give this to you, but here's this song that we're not as sure about, why don't you do that one? Which is, again, I mean, we talked about that on the Hard Promises episode. It's crazy that song didn't make the cut, because it really is a good song. I would also then just argue, I'm not sure whether it's, I don't know if it stacks up with the other greatest hits as a song, just in terms
Stop
of
Dragging My Heart Around?
Yeah. I mean, it's a good song. I don't think it's at that very top Petty table, man.
Well, I would do this exercise and maybe, you know, put Here Comes My Girl, Even the Losers, The Waiting, You Got Lucky, Change of Heart, and Don't Come Around Here No More, and put Stop Dragging My Heart Around in the middle of that and see if it holds up. I think it'll do just fine.
Okay.
And I would say, you know, you mentioned Insider. So that kind of brings up, and I think maybe we'll talk about this when we get into the anthology. I have a whole 2-disc, 3-disc, what, you know, what if they had released a 2-disc at this point or a 3-disc at this point. Maybe we could talk about that during the anthology discussion. But Insider would certainly be on that. It's more of a best of, as opposed to calling it a greatest hit, right? Because, you know, it never was really, really released as a single. It didn't get a whole lot of radio airplay unless DJs are kind of going off the reservation a bit.
Yeah.
But I think it definitely would have made a 2-disc version of this.
Well, that's interesting. When you said that, then I hadn't thought about it that way, because greatest hits has a very specific connotation, right? And then, like you said, that's where your argument about Jamming Me over Runaway Trains definitely carries a lot of weight. If it's a best of, then you get into, and that's where the anthology through the years, Tom even said that, right? They said, well, we're gonna pick some of our favorite songs as well as the songs that people expect on there. And I was looking through that. You know what's weird about that one is that it was released in 2000, but there's not a single song on that record from Wildflowers, which I found quite odd. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it was an MCA only.
Was it?
I think so, but I might be wrong. I think that's why it was only, I don't know why they went back and did a 2-disc out of that, but I think it was MCA only material.
You might be right. Yeah. Good catch.
So the other thing I would point out is, you know, just looking at straight streams, Love is a Long Road, 13th highest streams amongst this MCA material. You're So Bad, the 16th most.
Yeah.
Just so where, you know, sort of ranks in his top 20 or top 25, Facing the Crowd, 19th, A Woman Love, 22nd, Anything That's Rock and Roll, 23rd most. So we're right on that cusp of popularity within the fans as well when it comes to these cuts that we're making, you know?
Yeah. And I suppose that, I mean, I didn't give as much weight to streams, just because that's going to be weighted with modern day, modern era, that kind of stuff. But I was looking at, you know, you look at even some of the stuff that, you know, the songs that weren't released as singles that did hit the rock chart. Night Watchman hit 21. Between Two Worlds at 35, I feel a whole lot better. Like Love is a Long Road at number 7, but One Story Town at number 15. You know, there's a whole bunch in there. Like I said, Out in the Cold might be the most glaring of those, and I didn't get that on my album, but that was, I think that one might have been the toughest cut for me, is not putting that one on there, because first of all, I love that song. Again, it's another one that I really hadn't paid enough attention to until I did Integrate Wide Open, but it's a great track, man, and would fit with the party atmosphere of the album, right?
Yeah, and we talked about it during that album wrap. It's just criminally under-streamed. 1.9 million streams, 28 points though, because it got the number one on the rock chart. Yeah, that's definitely a tough cut. And I think that there is enough here for a really good two-disc set.
Oh yeah.
If you add a lot of these cuts down to Too Good to Be True, Anything That's Rock and Roll, Make It Better, Forget About Me, King's Highway. And then you're also adding in stuff like Insider and Straight Into Darkness and You know, It'll All Work Out and tracks like that, you could really have a killer 40 track overview of his MCA career.
Well, that was the other very, very tough cut with Straight Into Darkness, because I know we both love that song. I think it's the strongest song on Long After Dark, but just didn't do anything for some reason. So I didn't do that. I didn't do the two disc, but maybe let's run through. How did you split that? Did you do sort of a greatest hits and then the rest, or did you distribute it? Because I can't remember how you sequenced that.
Well, I have 9 different versions. I have a few different versions here, and I haven't decided. And that's sort of why I punted that to the anthology discussion. But I think if we're getting to where we can have 44 songs, if you know, you're thinking 22 or 21 per disc, and you have a 2-disc set, you can add some of these. And I won't go through the whole thing, but like you can add some of these, like Surrender, like B-side, The Wild One Forever, you know, Insider, Straight Into Darkness. You could add tracks like my favorites from this era that were B-sides that came out that were pretty popular, like Keep a Little Soul was released as a single, which is really good. You can add Ways to Be Wicked, a lot of those tracks off of that Nobody's Children disc on Playback. You know, Waiting for Tonight was part of the Full Moon Fever sessions. I don't know why they didn't release that as part of this greatest hits package instead of Something in the Air, because that one was actually, I think, sort of ready to go. You Come Through as well, so you could add all these, and then you start to you have enough breathing room to get All or Nothing, Out in the Cold, Too Good to Be True on the disc as well from this last album prior to the greatest hits. So I don't know. I think a lot of it is it's a single disc. You know, we're charging 17, 18 bucks for a single disc. We're charging 36 bucks for a double disc. We want to sell as many units as we can, so we're trying to keep it to one disc. And only later does, you know, some of these 2-3 disc sets come out where you actually can get a full sense of his MCA material, or at least a full overview of his MCA material, while also adding enough songs to make it really appealing to fans who want Surrender, or who want, you know, Waiting for Tonight, want like 6 or 7 new tracks that all, I think, hold up with a lot of these hits that are on there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and I suppose then when you're talking about that, you've got 5 tracks from Full Moon Fever. So you've included 5. So obviously we talked about Love is a Long Road, but that made both of our lists. And then you put You're So Bad on as well, which of course, I mean, another, it's a petty fan favorite, hit number 5 on the rock chart. But your disc now is really loaded up with Full Moon Fever. So were you thinking then about sort of distribution as much, but they're trying to be representative across the albums then?
Yeah, I mean, I think Love is a Long Road is a better song than Out in the Cold, but you could make a case for Out in the Cold over Love is a Long Road, for sure, if you want to be more representative to Into the Great Wide Open, or if you want to, I mean, I don't know that I would pick something from a different album other than maybe something like Out in the Cold.
Yeah. You know what's funny is I was thinking about this too, and I almost did this, but I thought, you know what, it might be a little bit asinine to do this, but I almost picked, and it was my favorites first. The only one I did it was Runaway Trains instead of Jamming Me, but I almost went with Out in the Cold instead of Into the Great Wide Open. Because, okay, Into the Great Wide Open is a great song, but it's not nearly my favorite from that record. It's kind of lower half on Into the Great Wide Open as an album, because I think there's much stronger material. But you kind of have to put it on there, right? I mean, yes, even just the video because, alone, it's got to be on there, you know?
Yeah, like if you're looking at this from a, and I think there's definitely a case where if we get into the nuts and bolts of this, and this is what's funny about this conversation is that it really doesn't matter anymore because playlists are ubiquitous and you don't have to worry about this. But if we were sitting there in 1993 and, you know, one of the cases I might make or you might make to me is that, well, everybody has Full Moon Fever.
Yeah.
Like, anybody who's really interested in Tom Petty is going to have that album. So they're going to have You're So Bad. They're going to have A Love Is a Long Road, which maybe is why those didn't make the album and only the major hits made the album. And we could say, well, we could add something from earlier in the catalog, Woman in Love, certainly Change of Heart and Jam and Me, Rebels, anything that's rock and roll.
Yeah.
You could add one of these or two of these to make it more, you know, spread out over his entire career, as opposed to loading up on what we think are the best songs and most popular songs.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Here's a question I didn't prep you for, so I'm going to throw this at you cold. If you could only, so, you know, I think we're both agreed, and I think most Petty fans would agree that Something in the Air is the sort of, you know, weak track, if we want to say that, is the weak link or whatever it might be, and maybe stops it from being a perfect greatest hits. If there was one song that you were going to replace Something in the Air with, and we were sticking to the 18 tracks, which one would you go with? Because I know which one it is for me, straight up, but it's not what I would necessarily consider, you know, my favorite song or whatever it is, but there's one track that I think has to go on there instead of Something in the Air. Which one is it for you?
Well, I don't think you're going to like my answer, but it would be Stop Dragging My Heart Around.
Okay. I like that answer.
Okay, I don't know if you would think that's a cop out. I think if you get out of that, if that's not like eligible, that makes it a really tough decision. Just to do a one for one replace, because you can make a case for six or seven different songs. What would it be for you?
Change of Heart, in a heartbeat. Just because it's sort of it's probably the second best song on the album. It fits really well with the rest of the singles.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like a single, right? Like, it, you know, and it's one of those you think, why was that not bigger? And why is that not in that conversation? I think the only reason that's not in the conversation or doesn't get streamed or listened to as much maybe is because it didn't make the greatest hits, really.
Yeah. You know? I think that's part of it. When I heard it, I don't remember if I had heard it on the radio prior to like going back and looking at his chart history, and it seemed familiar. But I don't know if I didn't put it together with Petty or how much I heard it on the radio.
Right. When
it's a great tune. And it kind of has the ELO feel to me.
Yeah.
With the crunchy guitar.
3:18. It's tight.
Yeah.
It's this perfect little dense.
So you like that? You like that a lot more than Jam and Me?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah. I think lyrically, it's a much better song. Because the lyrics in Jam and Me are sort of, you know, they're thrown together by Bob and Tom, and they're not, you know, I don't think they agonized over that lyric, right? It was very much that sort of, let's get this done quickly. Part of they're coming off the tour, and they've got that work aesthetic about, well, let's just write quickly and record quickly and get this done. I don't think they spent a ton of time, right? You know, and it was like the Tom quote about when he called Bob and said, hey, I've written these lyrics, what do you think? He's like, yeah, whatever, do what you want. So I think Bob was like, I don't care. If you think that's good, do it, you know?
I mean, I think from a greatest hits standpoint, the biggest snub was Jam and Me, because it was number one on the rock chart, 18th on Hot 100. It was his biggest hit that was left off, but I could see a case. I could certainly see a case for a preference of Change of Heart. I cannot see Runaway Trains.
Yeah, no, and I wouldn't put that on there. I wouldn't switch out that out one for one, right? I wouldn't switch that over. I'm kind of regretting picking Runaway Trains now, because I think I've upset you. upset John's equilibrium.
Yeah, well, it's. I mean, I don't know. Like, I listened to it to try to be with an open mind, and I don't know how you made that decision. But hey, we all have, you know, music is subjective.
Right? One thing we were in agreement on, though, when I was looking through, was that neither of us reduced the representation of any album apart from taking off Something in the Air, right, which I thought was interesting, because neither of us, you know, because I don't know where you would. Damn the Torpedoes at 4 might be slightly overrepresented. And then, you know, like you said, if we're being really clinical about it, even The Losers not being a single and not, well, I don't think the rock chart actually even existed at that point. I think, I don't know when that came into existence. I'm not too sure what era that was, but hang on, let me look. because, well, no, Night Watchman hit the mainstream rock chart, so maybe right around 80, 81-ish it started. But Even the Losers didn't chart, so I think that, you know, if you're going to be really clinical and really merciless, you could say, should it be on a greatest hits if it wasn't a single, if it didn't get any airplay? I don't know.
I mean, it's a classic. It did get airplay. Sure. I mean, I'd heard that song before,
right?
You know, on the radio. I don't know how they do the singles all the time and how they chart the chart performance. But Even Losers was a, I don't think it was a hit because it was on the greatest hits. So there's nothing there that they included that I would remove. It's just that we have extra space to add other than Something in the Air.
Well, thank God, right? Thank God we don't have to start taking things off and be like, you know, if you said to someone, you've got to get it down to 15, I would just throw my hands up and walk away because I don't think I could do it. Like, what would you take off, you know?
Yeah, what do you cut? You don't.
It's just a murderer's row. I mean, I went back and looked. Apart from Something in the Air, every song is a 10 that I'd rated every song a 10 apart from three, which were 9s. And my 9s were Into the Great Wide Open, You Got Lucky, and I Need to Know. And I Need to Know only because it's a good song, but it's a really short in and out. It's got one message. It's one-dimensional, not in a bad way, but it's fairly one-dimensional, that song, right? It's not like as interesting as some of the other stuff, but still, I mean, this powerful, driving song. So they're all 9s and 10s. I don't know. I can't take anything off this record, you know?
Yeah, I don't think we would. And just to talk about Mary Jane's Last Dance a little bit, what a track to just add to your greatest hit. I pulled a quote. He was really against the idea of, this is from, I had to watch the documentary Running Down a Dream, the part about the greatest hits. He's like, I was really against the idea of the greatest hits, but it was contractual. I was really against this, writing a song for it. How can it be a hit if it's a new song? And then he goes, so he took this track, which was part of the Full Moon Fever sessions. They did not have the chorus. Rick Rubin liked it and said, well, why don't you write a chorus for it? And they did. And it turns out to be Mary Jane's Last Dance. And I think, you know, that song's success contributed a lot to the fact that this went 12 times platinum or whatever it was. Because this is the one place where you could get it. If you're buying the single, it's $5. If you're buying this greatest hits, it's 15 to 17. Yeah. So why not get all these other hits on top of it? And just an incredible song to pull out of the archives and to dust off for a greatest hit, which actually became its greatest hit, a greatest hits for him. And it's my wife's favorite song. So whenever he played this at concert, she would always light up, and he almost always played it.
Yeah.
After it came out.
Well, 552 times. I think it's like it's 7th or 8th most played song live or something like that. It's in that region, right? But I'd said on the episode, and we talked a little bit online on our regular socials about songs that are included on Greatest Hits albums that belong on Greatest Hits albums. You know, and I heard from quite a lot of people and some really good songs. I don't think anything gets anywhere near Mary Jane's Last Dance in terms of, I don't think there's a top 10 song in any of those other artists' catalogs where I think Mary Jane, you could make a strong argument, this is one of the best songs he wrote, right? And just that switch in the chorus is what makes the whole thing. You know, he said, you know, when they brought in and, hey, Indiana Girl, go out and find the world, and Mike Campbell said, we all hated it. And then he comes back with this new chorus and just totally transforms the song. And it's funny how that one change can work. But you can also hear, like, you know, with that guitar riff, the opening, the feel of it, the groove of it, you can see why Rubin thought, yeah, you got to do something with this dude. There's gold here. This is, you know, work this up.
Yeah, it ended up being the last track that Stan Lynch played on.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
Last original, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, last original. So what a way to go out for him. He didn't know it at the time.
Yeah.
I was watching that whole divorce on the documentary as well. It's just funny how I think Tom is very non-confrontational and let this sort of relationship wither a bit.
Yeah.
Because he didn't want to have the tough conversations. And then he was also hearing Stan badmouth his music and not really wanting to play on it. And it's just sort of this long divorce.
Yeah.
As they start trying out other drummers for Wildflowers. So pretty crazy story there. And that's, I mean, what a way to go out though for Stan Lynch, if your last song you played on is Mary Jane's Last Dance.
Well, and crushed it, because it's a great drum part. You know, and I found out, I didn't know this, but Rick Rubin said to Stan when he comes in, yeah, I only want to hear one fill. Stan Lynch, he's not going to just do one fill. He's gonna, and he's not like playing all over it. It's quite a reserved track, but it's a great drum part. And it sounds fantastic because Rick Rubin knows how to mic drums up. And, you know, before the days when he got into the loudness wars and everything's just brick walled, Rick Rubin used to be a very, very, very good producer. And I think he got a great take out of Stan on this. But Stan said, or Tom said, you know, Stan played his part. We looked up, he wasn't there anymore, and we basically never saw him again. So it's one of those things, man. Bands fall out of love with each other.
For sure. I think he came back and played at Benefit at the Viper Room because Tom threatened to replace him for that show with Ringo, because Stan apparently had moved to Florida.
Yeah.
And was like, well, is there any money in this Benefit show? And he's like, no, the band's doing the show and you need to be there. And he was mad. Tom was mad that Stan was acting like this. So he showed up and played, but I think that was their last performance together.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And I've got, that's the photo that I used for my compilation on Spotify. If you notice, that's the only photo that exists from that gig, because it was no cameras allowed. And it was the opening of the Viper Room. So it was the, you know, Johnny Depp had called around a few people and the Heartbreakers went in. We don't know exactly what the set list is because there's only sort of a fragment of it kicking around. But
oh, really?
Yeah, but what a cool gig yeah. That would be to be at, because that's such a small venue, and to see the Heartbreakers at their prime. You know, they're right at the peak of their powers to go and be in that little room with those guys. So cool.
So did we talked about mine, You're So Bad, Stop Dragging My Heart Around, and Jamming Me, I also added Love Is a Long Road. You added Rebels.
Yeah.
Runaway Trains, A Woman in Love, and Love Is a Long Road as well.
Yeah.
Right. And I asked, why'd you pick Runaway Trains over Jamming Me? So we got that covered. And I'm like, okay, so we discussed Stop Dragging Your Heart Around. So what are your thoughts about You're So Bad? Is it even close?
Yeah.
For you, or was it close for you?
It's a great song. I think it's maybe, I don't know. I'm going to say something now and it's going to come out. I'm going to regret this as soon as I've said it. I don't think it's a serious song, which songs don't have to be, of course, but it's this frivolous little bit of whimsy, which I love Petty doing, but that doesn't scream single to me ever. You know what I mean? Does that make any sense? I don't know.
It does. It was a crowd favorite. I think fan favorite as well. And I see the, if someone was going to pick apart my playlist, I could see that it's too heavy on Full Moon Fever. And that's an album that most people have. So I could see that, understand that argument. I think it does keep the party going. I think it's a fun one. And you mentioned like, oh, well, Runaway Trains, that shows his musical breadth. I think, you know, You're So Bad shows his sense of humor.
Yeah, for sure.
You could make the same argument, you know, but just a different adjective there.
Hey, I've never claimed to be consistent in my opinions or positions, John. It's the old Groucho Marx saying, well, if you don't like my ethics, don't worry, I've got other ones. You know?
Yeah, so I left mine with my biggest snubs list was Facing the Crowd, Out in the Cold, A Woman in Love, and Rebels. Like, those are painful not to have on. And that would be fixed with a two-disc set. But none of those are screaming to me. I mean, you know, Out in the Cold, I could argue. Woman in Love, I could argue. Rebels does not really fit with my party vibe I'm trying to go with. So I feel pretty comfortable with it. It is tough. I mean, whenever you constrain yourself with time and a band this good, you're going to have to make some tough cuts. I thank you for giving me the extra two tracks so that I could get Jamming Me on there for posterity in terms of its chart performance, and I could get Change of Heart on there as well.
Well, and one thing that we haven't really touched on is, like you said, we've only taken the cover off the Greatest Hits. We haven't removed anything. We haven't gone into that, oh, that shouldn't be on a Greatest Hits album. You know, we had a conversation about Even the Losers, but we both agree it's got to be on there because it's one of the most well-known songs in the catalog. And again, you know, Damn the Torpedoes is overrepresented in quotes, and maybe Full Moon Fever on your disc, but it's because they were gigantic records.
Gigantic,
you know,
songs,
and,
yeah.
You know, just huge songs, played live tons and tons and tons. I was looking through, you know, you look at the average number of times that a Greatest Hits song was played live is 435. And that's with the 21 or something in the air dragging it down a little bit, right? So these were the songs that people go to Tom Petty concerts to see. But
yeah, you put this on at a party, or you put it in your 5-disc changer. You don't ever have to take it out.
No,
remember the 5-disc, 6-disc?
Oh yeah,
changers or cartridges. I mean, kids these days, they just pull up their phone and have their playlist. They pull up some playlist that somebody else made. and they hit play and they don't know what we went through. Now, I'll just say this on the, you know, the greatest hits in general. Like, I'm so fascinated by these because these were huge in my life. You know, funds were limited. I mean, in terms of how much music I wanted to consume, and I had to try to get best values I could. And so I was buying like a lot of different greatest hits because I was really getting into classic rock as I grew up in the 80s. I was going back to the 70s and, you know, late 60s sometimes, you know, listening to the Beatles and all these other bands and having to try, you know, trying to get as many of my favorite songs for as little amount as money.
Yeah.
Really lend itself to greatest hits. And I always am fascinated by when they make mistakes or why are they doing this or why are they doing that? But, you know, Petty's greatest hits, ubiquitous when I was in college in terms of, you know, people having it. It's up there for me with like Bob Marley Legend, which went 15 times platinum. As far as an overview and how quality, you know, top to bottom quality of the album. The other ones that kind of jumped out to me, Madonna, the Immaculate Collection. I wasn't a huge Madonna fan, but I know like every girl I knew in college had that. 11 times platinum. I did own it as well, I think. Queen's Greatest Hits, 9 times platinum in the United States. Obviously went like 25 times platinum in the UK. That is a 17 track, just masterpiece, but it also has room for more. If you were to release it on CD, you could add 14 minutes or so.
Yeah,
I think of songs or more, 18 minutes, 20 minutes of songs. Like they could have added more to that. The Cars, 1985, had 13 tracks. There's a 2002 version that's better. It went 6 times platinum. So, and the last one I wanted to mention is another one that just jumped out to me thinking about it was Creedence Clearwater Revival. They had a 20 track.
I totally forgot about that one.
Chronicle that was. Went 12 times platinum, which is just jam packed with good song after good song or great song after great song. Obviously the Beatles Red and Blue compilations were amazing, but you know, it's a lot, you know, it's 4 discs and they even left off. So, I mean, it's hard to compare anything to what the Beatles did. And the other one I want to mention was the Eagles greatest hits, greatest hits 1 that went 38 times platinum. The light blue one, and then the second greatest hits went 11 times platinum. So even their second set almost did what Tom Petty's did. But again, those are very shorter discs. All these have room to add something once you get into the CD age. And these were huge for me, just being able to buy these and getting an overview of a band and then realizing whether or not I wanted to go back and get into their, you know, album by album discography.
When I think, you know, if we're talking about where does Petty's greatest hit stand in that pantheon, in that conversation, for me, the Eagles is a funny one because I loved the Eagles when I was a kid. And I still look back and I think, you know, I can say, yeah, they were, the quality of the songs was good and the production was great and the songwriting and the vocal, all the performances and everything else. But Eagles, I don't know if they're really still, I mean, I know with our generation, people still buy tickets and everything else, but I don't think you hear Eagles on the radio maybe as much as you even hear Petty anymore. I think they've sort of, they're a bit more time locked into a certain era than Petty's. I think Petty's music is a bit more durable and I think will be played still, you know, and it's going to be the hits. But I still think that you're going to hear Free Falling in 50 years. Hotel California might be the only Eagles hit, really, that's going to persevere, where I think Petty's got a few more of those. So I don't know. So 38 times platinum, that I didn't know it was that big. That's insane. That's crazy.
Everybody had that 71 to 75. And and I don't know when that came out where they started adding tracks, because this one didn't. I mean, this one had 10 tracks and it was all from their albums. And I think the second one was the same way. So I don't know when that happened. Like, oh, we need a new track for the greatest hits compilation. And you get some, and that's the one criticism we have of this. Well, two, like, they could have added more songs. So why didn't they add a few more? And then why did they include Something in the Air? Now, they probably were told they had to produce 2. So that's what they had. I mean, I think they could have worked a little harder and, you know, putting Waiting for Tonight on there or Digging Up You Come Through would have been a great addition if they could have gotten Lenny Kravitz to appear a couple years earlier to do his part.
Or Surrender. I mean, again, Surrender, a song that we both like.
I think it did get added to their anthology release a few years later. So I would say that would be my one criticism, is the inclusion of that cover. And then the other is, you know, Was it a conscious effort to limit the total number of songs? And why were you doing that?
Yeah.
Because it could be a record company exec saying, well, we want to give them this, but we don't want to give them too much to cannibalize your own back catalog. But I think that's, from a fan standpoint, that's kind of a double-edged sword, because if you, the more songs you can put on the greatest hits, the better chance somebody's going to hear something that they're going to turn into a huge Tom Petty fan and go back and want to listen to every album that they released over the course of whatever their career was at that point.
So what was the runtime? 65:44 is the runtime of the CD. So yeah, I mean, it's not like it's, you know, even if you put it down to 75 or 74, I don't think that's overstaying its welcome because of the quality of the songs that you can add. So it'd be interesting, if it would have been interesting to hear that conversation about, you know, which ones are we including, which ones are we not. And again, you know, Anything That's Rock and Roll was released under as a UK edition bonus track. So clearly that conversation was had. So I don't know why UK only, like maybe again, like we said, where it was one of the songs that sort of, you know, broke them more or less in the UK. So maybe that's part of it too, is the market, right? If we're releasing this predominantly in the US and this is predominantly a US band, these were the ones that were the big hits in the US. But like you said, then how do you justify not putting Jamming Me on there?
Right.
Such a strange, the omissions are stranger than the inclusions on this, I think.
And I don't know, like, I think maybe you and I have talked about this more than they talked about it. I don't know. I don't know, like, if Tom doesn't want to do the greatest hits compilation, yeah, and doesn't want to write songs for it and is kind of doing this begrudgingly, like how into the weeds is he on what's being included or what's not being included, or and who's in charge, you know, of the track listing? I find it fascinating. I would love to just watch a, you know, an hour documentary about the making of the greatest hits and like the inside conversations as to like what the decision makers would take into account.
Yeah.
Because Jamming Me isn't up there with his all time greatest hits in terms of like the quality of the song or how often it was played or whatever, but chart wise,
yeah,
it's absolutely a greatest hit of his and it should have been included just from a chart performance standpoint.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was looking at comparable. I was looking at greatest hits too, and some of the ones that I'd written down: Fleetwood Mac's greatest hits.
The cover
is phenomenal. Eurythmics, I think, is a really, really good. You know, we got that Dave Stewart link there, but that's a fantastic greatest hit. Springsteen's, I was looking at, and I was kind of surprised, you know, obviously because there's parallels always drawn between Tom and Bruce, but that was released in '95, so it's kind of right around the same era. There's four extra songs. Four new songs on Springsteen's greatest hits, which means there's only 14 of his hits to that point on that record. And I would argue of the four they added, only Secret Garden belongs on that record, because the other ones, Murder Incorporated, Blood Brothers, This Hard Land, they're good songs, but to me, can you hum any of those right now? Could you, just off the top of your head? Where the rest of the, you know, Atlantic City, Dancing in the Dark, Born in the USA, Glory Days, Human Touch, Born to Run, Thunder Road, all these are iconic songs. The ones they added is like, yeah, you can tell that these were not, you know, you kind of had to work at these. So I don't think Springsteen's greatest hits stacks up.
Yeah, he did really, it was 76 minutes. So he was like, there was a conversation there. Like, we need to give him something. The new song. Yeah. New songs, four new songs. I remember Murder Incorporated.
Yeah.
I don't remember Blood Brothers or This Hard Land.
Yeah. But again, I mean, I think if you look at the times or two, you know, we've got 18 songs and it's 70 odd minutes, but Springsteen tends to write longer songs too, where Petty in his early years was really writing those nice, tight three and a half minutes is probably the average song length, right? So,
and this one
makes a difference too.
The Springsteen one went 6 times platinum, and I think the Fleetwood Mac went 9 times platinum. Double checking that. 8 times platinum.
Yeah.
So, just what a monster. I was just underlining that because what a monster hit for Petty. I think in terms of album sales, it was more than Into the Great Wide Open, Full Moon Fever, and Dan the Torpedoes combined.
Yeah. Oh, it was far and away his biggest record by absolutely miles, right? I mean, the same with Queen. Queen's greatest hits was far and away their biggest seller. I think Aerosmith Big Ones might be their biggest seller. So, you know, greatest hits tend to be because they're more accessible to a wider audience. So that's you know, no bad thing. I was looking to it. Dylan, you know, Dylan's greatest hits is only 10 songs. Rolling Stones Hot Rocks, 64 to 71. It's a great record. It's padded out a little bit. But yeah, I mean, the Beatles are the ones I go back to. The Blue Album, when you look at the songs on that, it's just insane. You think, and that's just one of their greatest hits. And there's what, 28 songs on it? Bananas.
Here's a, you mentioned Aerosmith. Because every time somebody mentions big ones to me, I'm thinking back, well, what about the Red Album, the Red Greatest Hits, that first one?
Yep.
That one went 12 times platinum, the first one. The second one, big ones, went 4 times platinum.
Oh, it only went 4?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of crazy when you think about how big the Big Ones album was.
Yeah.
In 94. But the 1980 release, which is a really good overview of their 70s stuff, basically.
It's great.
Went 12 times platinum.
Although, again, I mean, it's got Remember Walking in the Sand on it, which I love, but it's a cover. I don't know. It's the strongest stuff, but it's got
it's
some
also
of the great
come,
stuff on
come
it.
Together. But that was kind
come
of a
Together's
hit.
On there,
it?
Yeah. Yeah. But that was it. Also, that was from, it was from the movie, right? That was that Sergeant Pepper's that weird movie with the Bee Gees in it.
So, for me, huge.
Yeah.
Influential, got me like even more into it. Some of the older stuff. Certainly some ways to improve it, but glad he released it. I wish we knew more about the track listing as to why it. I honestly think that this conversation might have been longer than the one that he used to decide the track listing.
Well, I mean, again, this is where, you know, that's why it's called show business and it ain't called show fun. You know, it is a business. And as you said, Tom didn't want to, wasn't really in favor of doing it. And it's also strange where you think, you know, he's in the middle of writing Wildflowers. He knows how seismic that album's going to be. You've got to have a sense of this is the best thing I've done so far, potentially, right? So to have this greatest hits where you've not even done your career, looks, how old was he? And so he'd have been, what, 43? So he's not done his career right yet. So to do a greatest hits, and when you think about the songs after that belong on a Tom Petty greatest hits, I mean, dear God, there's no way you can do a single. How would you do that? Now, that'll be an interesting one when we get to that. Once we've done the 16 albums, then we'll force ourselves one exercise. If we had to do a single disc greatest hits, how do we do it? Because that'll be torturous.
Now, is that sadism or? What are we doing to ourselves? This is absolutely unnecessary pain we got to put ourselves through to try to knock his whole entire career down to one disc.
Oh my God.
It's insanity.
Yeah, maybe we should just leave it.
Masochism?
I don't think.
I don't know what's
what. I really don't think you could do it, right? I mean, I don't know. Because how am I going to leave
yeah, I mean,
off
you're
room
cutting,
at the top?
Yeah, you
how am
could
I
do
leave
it, but
off?
You're cutting. You're cutting Even Losers off. You're cutting, you know, you might be cutting like Here Comes My Girl. I mean, it's just. It's you're asking for, you know, Into the Great White Open is probably getting me gone. You're asking for trouble. It's got to be a minimum of two discs, and even that's going to be tough.
Yeah, I mean, I think getting it down to two discs from the post Great White Open is going to be, you know, although having said that, depending on what criteria right. we use, right? Because again, if you go to chart performance and all those kinds of things, Mary Jane's Last Dance was the last hit he had, really. You know,
yeah, big, well, you know, he had some off of Wildflowers, but yeah,
you don't know
he
how it feels,
start,
I guess, is yeah,
yeah. He started to peter out a little bit with the chart performance, but I think that was what was important to him at that point. He did have a number one album later on, Hypnotic Eye, I think was the number one album,
yeah.
And did have some hits here and there, but it wasn't like you're getting into your 40s and 50s and 60s, you're not exactly, you know, hot on the charts,
yeah,
so to speak. So
when I think it comes, we talked a little bit about on the album wrap episode with The Great Open, it's that switch in his songwriting where now I think he is writing predominantly for himself, and he's trust that other people will listen to it because I've got this fan base who likes my music, but I'm not going to chase the chart hit anymore.
Right.
And so that, I think that plays into that as well, you know?
Well, you also mentioned like, you know, bands chasing the trends in the late 80s, mid 80s, late 80s. And I think there was a few tracks like Runaway Train. Runaway Trains that you could, you know, sound kind of dated.
Yeah.
I don't think that those worked out that great for him. You know, maybe other than You Got Lucky.
Yeah.
And so I think he just made a determination, like, I'm not going to do that anymore. And, you know, I'm just going to go back to the Heartbreaker sound as much as possible.
Yeah, definitely.
Because everybody, you know, all the bands kind of got, you know, in their own heads about what new electronic sounds we can make and how we can make things sound kind of weird in the studio. At the time, yeah, it sounded futuristic, but now it sounds dated.
When they, you know, they had Ben Montench there saying, "Yeah, I'm not playing that. Go screw yourself. It might be new and it might be shiny. I'm not doing it." But here's my argument about Runaway. Well, I'll make one last case for Runaway Trains, and it's that, is that I think that if you update the instrumentation on that or sort of change and don't, I think the song itself is really good. I think the song is really strong. I think if you played that, it's one of those you could play acoustic solo, you could play it on piano, you could play it because the song, the lyrics are really good and the melody is really good and the structure of it's really good. Is the Jan Hammer intro, you know, chewing the scenery? Yes, absolutely. But I also have a real, because I used to listen to Jean-Michel Jarre when I was younger. Like I'm a keyboard kid, so it never bothered me as much. But, you know, I think in respect, you know, if I'm taking one thing away from this conversation, is I think you're probably right that I shouldn't have put Runaway Trains on my greatest hits.
I would argue in all seriousness to reconsider that decision and to perhaps, and also the funny thing is that you, for your CD version, mm-hmm. you have to remove a song.
Yeah.
And you remove Rebels.
I did.
Not Runaway Trains. It's amazing. No, you can absolutely love the song and it doesn't belong on the greatest hits. That's okay, just look, my position on it.
Well, look here. I've done one already. We're going to make another football reference. I'm going to call an audible and I'm changing my decision. I'm keeping Rebels on and I'm taking Runaway Trains off, which does mean, however, on the CD version, but it does mean that I've got no representation now for Let Me Up, which I'm okay with. I can live with it.
I don't think you have to have a song from every album necessarily, unless it really belongs.
And I think Rebels is stronger than anything else off or anything that was released from Let Me Up.
But you should probably take a hard look at your LP and see if Jammin' Me would fit where Runaway Trains is. If you're trying to make a greatest hits album.
It might. I'll put it under consideration. How about that?
That's fine. I'll live with that. Thank you.
Okay, well, is there anything else for us to talk about, or should we start wrapping things up? What do you think?
No, I think it's good, and I do, when we get into the anthology discussion, which will be a fun one too, we could talk about, I have a 3-disc version, which I think is insanely good, but it is also, you know, predates the box set a bit, which is what they were trying to do with the box set, with a 5-disc box set. So it's a lot of that's overlap, but I think it could have been affordable and would have been amazing for fans as well. So we could talk about that during that episode.
Well, I do want to just quickly run down a greatest hits that one of my listeners sent me. It's a guy who has been a listener since pretty much day one. He's a big supporter of the podcast, Paul Roberts. So listen to this. He's gone rogue. Like, he's gone completely off the reservation. Okay. So we've got 13 songs from the original set. So he's taken out a bunch. So he's going American Girl Breakdown, Dog on the Run, live, but trimmed down to 4 minutes. So that's from the official live leg. Listen to A Heart Refugee, Here Comes My Girl, The Waiting, Even the Losers, Women in Love, Straight Into Darkness, Southern Accents, Rebels, It'll All Work Out, song that we both love, Handle With Care. So he's kind of doing the Stop Dragging My Heart Around thing, where he's dragging in something from something else. And then he goes Running Down a Dream, Free Falling, Walk Back Down, Learning to Fly, Great Wide Open, Dark of the Sun, and then finishes up with Mary Jane's Last Dance, which again, it's a pretty good album, man.
Did he remove? That is the question.
He removed. That's a good question. I didn't actually write that down. So he didn't put on. Let's have a look.
So I'll just say when he.
You Got Lucky isn't on there. You don't Come Around Here No More isn't on there.
Wow.
What else have we got that's not on there? I Need to Know, I think, maybe. Isn't on there. And then something there, obviously. Here Comes My Girl in there, yeah. Don't Do Me Like That. Don't Do Me Like That is the other one missing.
Oof. Yeah. That's tough. No offense. That's a rough. That'd be rough.
Yeah.
If I were buying it, I'd be looking at it like,
But 21 songs. I mean, when you read those 21 songs out, if that's a playlist that I'm going to listen to, it's a great 21 songs.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, but if you're ponying the thing with Petty. $18 and you want the greatest hits, then you probably want a little bit different. Try listing on that.
Paul's from Bolton. You know, they're a little bit not too far from where I grew up, but they're a bit weird in Bolton. He's going to give
is
me.
Is this going to make the podcast?
Oh hell yeah! And he's going to give me all sorts of grief about that.
I will say, like, the biggest snubs for mine: A Face in the Crowd, Out in the Cold, Women Love, Rebels, all would fit perfectly. And I do like that he did include the. That's just segueing back to his. That when I do best of lists for Petty, I do include Handle with Care, End of the Line.
Yeah.
And sometimes even Last Night, because Last Night, which we might, I don't know if we're going to ever talk about his songs on those albums, but like that Last Night could have been a Petty hit or at least a great Petty album track. But we've also got Roy Orbison and the whole thing going on there. So I include a lot of those on the playlist as well. So I appreciate the fact that he did include that. I think as you get later in his career, some of that stuff might start popping up on his anthologies. I'm not sure, or live versions or something of, or maybe it's just his concert versions of the Handle with Care. He started playing it live,
but he didn't do. They did Tweeter as well, I think, live, and I think maybe End of the Line. That might be it from the Wilburys. I'd have to go look at the set list. Hey, let's bring it up. Let's see. Handle with Care, End of the Line, Tweeter and the Monkey Man, and Poorhouse. Oh, they did Poorhouse once live, which, great track. I love that track. In 2015 at the Troubadour in West Hollywood. Cool. Oh, Troubadour. That must have just been like a little, only a 10-song set, so that might have been like a promo-y benefit type of,
or benefit or something.
Yeah, they did. Oh, yeah, no, totally. So listen to this.
The smaller the room, the more wacky they'd get with their set list, because everybody that's there is just happy to be there.
Listen to the set list. Cabin Down Below, Little Red Rooster, Willie Dixon, I'm a Man, Bo Diddley, 13 Days, J.J. Cale, Dogs on the Run, Runaway, Del Shannon, with Jeff Lynne, who was in attendance, The Poorhouse with Jeff Lynne, Roll Over Beethoven, Chuck Berry, of course, with Jeff Lynne, because Jeff loves that song.
Yellow hit, yeah.
Mary Jane's Last Dance, and then Running Down a Dream, yep.
Yeah, they finish strong. They always finish strong.
All right, well, that's good then. I think we've, I was listening to your playlist, and I'm like, yeah, I can't, any fault with it. Like, you know, that's the pick any 20 songs from this year, as long as you've got, like you said, those anchor points in, the ones that have to be on the Free Fallers and Running Down Your Dreams and American Girls, you can really pad it out, because there's so many good tracks from these first nine records. So
I'd really have a problem with that. I mean, Don't Do Me Like That, it's one of my favorite songs for, and it was a big hit for them at that point, so it'd be a tough one to cut. But not to start nitpicking again. Don't Come Around Here No More. How can you not have Don't Come Around Here No More on a Greatest Hits package?
You know, it's my daughter's least. We skip that song in the van because my youngest daughter doesn't like that. She loves Petty, but she doesn't love that. And I think she's maybe because my wife has played that to death. I think she's just overplayed it for her. So, you know.
Sure, the live version from the.
Oh, my God.
Into the Great Wide Open Tour.
Yeah.
Whatever that one's called.
Yeah, God, what is that called? Take the Highway live. Yeah.
Take the Highway. Yeah. Show her that version.
Top 10 live performances of any song by anyone ever for me.
Well, I mean, he walks over to the, like, they're doing the intro and he walks over to the chest and pulls out the hat and everybody goes crazy.
Yeah.
And then obviously the song's amazing. And then he's got the whole breakdown where he's getting chased around the tree. It was insane. So yeah, it's a fantastic, that was just a good showmanship too.
Yeah. Which they didn't lean into. I think only on that tour, really, they went to those extremes, right? But
right.
Yep. All right, well, we'll leave it there. And you know what? I'll put a note out. I'd love to hear other people's greatest hits, because we're always, you know, the rationale behind why we choose things over others is that's our personal preference. You know, and there is some logic in there. You know, John's very clinical about, you know, looking at chart performance. He's way better than me at that stuff, looking at streams, all that kind of stuff. But we'd love to hear your greatest hits and what you would change, chop out, put in, take out, you know, within time constraints. You can't have 25 songs unless you're picking all the 2-minute ones, I guess. But until we meet again next week, keep listening to and sharing Tom's music. Try to be kind. Try to say I love you to someone at least once a day. Stay safe and healthy, and I'll be back with you next week to start talking about Wildflowers. But I've got a special pre-season episode that I'm doing this time, which is something I haven't done yet. But I think with the scale of that album, I've got to give you a little bit of a prep. Bye-bye.